I like when people share their testimonies about what God has done and is doing in their lives. Appreciate that, Bonnie. I'm reading from John 13, 34 through 35, and then John 15, 9 through 17. Jesus said, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Now John 15. "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command: love each other." Some time ago, a television documentary revealed a tribe of people in New Guinea who base their social behavior on the principle of indifference. No one expects anyone else to pay attention to others. If one of them runs out of food and begins to starve, he can expect no help from anyone, not even his mate. Mothers nurse their children for 3 years and then put them out to fend for themselves, not caring particularly if they live or die. Only the very old can remember a time when anybody in that society felt that he ought to lend a hand to anyone else. The people have become apathetic and dull, caring only about their next meal. What a sad and tragic way to live. And we might brush that off and say, well, that's a backward and primitive society. They don't know any better than that. But I have to tell you that there are those in our modern day society who live out their lives on the very basis of that ancient society: indifference. Indifference. People whose only concern is for themselves, their own wants and wishes and needs. But we need to understand that Jesus has called us to something better, to something higher. Love one another as I have loved you. Now, when Jesus talked about love, he was not talking about some vague sentimental feeling that comes and goes. He was talking about a love that acts, a love that responds, a love that gives itself to and for the sake of others. For Jesus said, "Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends." Now, Jesus was not so much calling his disciples to lay down their lives in physical death, but to lay down their lives in a ministry of caring love. And I would hasten to add that it's not an exclusive kind of love. I love my group, my friends, my church. Yes, Jesus said, love one another. But I want you to know that the God who loved the world so much that he gave his only begotten Son never intended that his love would be confined to the fellowship of the church. He always intended that his love would move out beyond that circle of disciples, beyond that fellowship of the church. That it would always move out to others. To others. Not because they are worthy or deserving, but simply because there is a need. Now, when Jesus talked about love, when he told us to live out our lives on the basis of self-giving love, he told us also that it would be evident in at least two ways. First of all, he tells us that where there is love, there is joy. I have told you these things, said Jesus, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Remember that song we used to sing, I've got joy, 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 down in my heart. I don't know about you, but I've discovered that a lot of people, even God's people, have little or no joy in their lives. E. Stanley Jones, in his book, Growing Spiritually, tells us about a man who lived a fantasy life. All he had to do was to think of something that he wanted, and poof, it happened. So this man, one day, he just sticks his hands in his pocket, he leans back, and he imagines a mansion, and poof, he's got a 16-bedroom mansion, 3 stories high. Servants who would wait on his every need. Now, of course, if you've got a home like that, you need the most expensive cars in the driveway. And he would imagine that and look out his window, poof. Some of the finest cars that money could buy. He could either get in one of those cars and drive himself or have one of his chauffeurs just drive him around, and when he would come back home from one of his drives, he would just think about the most sumptuous, the most delicious meal that you could imagine, and it was there. And he would sit down to the table, and he would eat that meal by himself. And this went on for some time. But then he began to realize that he needed something more than what he was experiencing to make him happy. And after a while, he begins to grow terribly bored and unchallenged, and he tells one of his attendants, I want to get out of this. I want to create some things on my own again. I'd rather be in hell than to be here for the rest of my life. To which his servant replied, where do you think you are? And I would suggest to you that those who are focused only on themselves and their needs and their wants, and those who are focused only on their own hurts and their own disappointments usually create their own hell. They are some of the most miserable people you will ever meet in your life. And at the same time, I've discovered that those who are focused on others, on the needs and wants and hurts and disappointment of others, create their own heaven, their own happiness. Dr. Carl Menninger, the famous psychiatrist, was once asked at a conference what he would do if he felt a nervous breakdown coming on, and I think the questioner was thinking that Menninger was going to say, well, I'd go to a psychiatrist. That's not what he said. He looked at the man who asked the question and said, if you feel a nervous breakdown coming on, lock up your house, go across the railroad tracks, find someone in need, and do something for him. I wonder, anyone here this morning on the verge of a nervous breakdown? Anyone here unhappy, sad, depressed? Anyone here having a pity party this morning saying nobody loves me, nobody cares, nobody understands? May I suggest that perhaps it's time to get your eyes off of self, that you lock up your house, go across the street or across town, and find someone in need and do something for them. You just may put a little joy in your life and in the life of someone else. Mother Teresa, so tiny, so frail, so full of joy. She served the needs of the outcast and dying on the streets of Calcutta. She wrote this about joy. Joy is prayer. Joy is strength. Joy is love. Joy is a net of love by which you catch souls. A joyful heart is the inevitable result of a heart burning with love. We all long for heaven where God is. But we have it in our power to be in heaven with Him right now, to be happy with Him at this very moment. But being happy with Him now means loving as He loves, helping as He helps, giving as He gives, serving as He serves, rescuing as He rescues, being with Him for all the 24 hours, touching Him in His distressing disguise. Where there is love, there is joy. And secondly, where there is love, there is power. Power to touch, power to change, power to redeem. Jesus said, by this, all men will know you are my disciples if you love one another. As that song has it, they will know we are Christians by our love. But Jesus goes on to tell us that love will do more than that. Love will bear fruit. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last. And what is this fruit of Christ-like love? I submit to you that it is transformed relationships and it is transformed lives. Some time ago, in another sermon, I said that some people are just not easy to love. Isn't that true? Haven't you found that to be true? Indeed, it is downright difficult to love some people, especially those who have offended us, or disappointed us, or hurt us in some way. And so very often we take the easy way out. I know I do. Loving only those who love us. Isn't that how you love? Let me tell you about some people, though, who didn't take the easy way out. In Guidepost magazine some years ago, there was a story about a woman named Edith Taylor. One day she received a devastating letter from Okinawa. This was back in 1950. Her husband, Carl, had written her to say that he had broken off their marriage by a Mexican divorce and had planned to marry a 19-year-old Japanese girl named Aiko. Edith was 48 years old at the time. She still loved her husband, so she had a choice. And she chose to keep in touch with him and the family that soon followed. One day, years later, Carl wrote her a letter saying, "I'm dying of lung cancer. What will become of my wife and my daughters?" Edith had to make another decision. After Carl died, she wrote Aiko, invited her and her daughters to come and live with her in Massachusetts. This woman opened her home and her heart. She said, "God took one life I dearly loved. But in a sense, He has given me three others." 12 years later, Edith officially adopted Aiko and her two daughters. You know, Edith could have become bitter and resentful, but she chose to go on loving others as Christ loved her. And in doing so, she gave God a chance to love them through her. A young man named Tommy, this is from Tim Wilkins in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He talks about a young man named Tommy who started drinking at the age of 16. He quickly developed a drinking problem. On December 23rd, 1982, having too much to drink, he refused to let his friends drive him home. He was less than a mile from his house when his car strayed across the center line. He struck an oncoming car head on and he killed the other driver instantly. Tommy was arrested for murder. His blood alcohol level was 3 times the legal limit. Tommy went to trial. He was sent to prison. A year or so after his parole, Frank and Elizabeth Morris befriended him. They drove him to church, invited him to his church, to their church, and then they would drive him to church twice a week. Eventually, Tommy accepted Christ. He joined their church. Very often, Tommy would be a guest at the Morris's home for dinner. Tommy, in time, turned his life completely around. He quit drinking. He even became an active lecturer for MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And you might ask, so what? Well, I left out the most significant point. You see, the young man that was killed in that head-on collision was Ted Morris, the 18-year-old son and only child of Frank and Elizabeth Morris. Now, I have to tell you that when I first read those stories, I thought, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. In fact, I told God that very thing. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. You know what God said to me? Kind of one of those in-your-face encounters, I think. God said to me, "I haven't asked you to do what they did. I haven't asked you to walk where those people walk. But if they could handle those big painful experiences with love and grace? Don't you think that you could handle those little hurts and slights and offenses that come your way with love and grace? What do you do when God talks to you like that? Yes, sir. I will try. When people hurt us, whether the hurts are big or small, we have a choice. We can spend our days filled with bitterness and resentment and thoughts of revenge. Or we can ask God to help us. We can ask God to strengthen us and thus give God a chance to love them through us. Sue Monk Kidd puts these words in the mouth of the disciple John following the arrest of Jesus. As soon as they seized the master in Gethsemane, we fled, said John, running into the night like fugitives. Peter, Thomas, James, all of us crouched in the upper room where we had celebrated Passover. The next morning, though, I knew we had to go to him. Look, I'm scared too, I said, but we can't forsake him. But they all refused, even Peter. And I made my way through the city alone, wanting nothing more to do with that cowardly lot. When I arrived at Calvary, they were already pounding the nails in his hands and feet. It was like a nightmare. Why? I kept asking, why is this happening? They hoisted the cross upright. He was all covered with blood as if he had been beaten. Some sort of grotesque crown had been pressed onto his head. You saved others, an onlooker shouted. Can't you save yourself? Jeers broke out. Stop it, I yelled. Angrily at the crowd, three soldiers squatted at his feet and rolled dice. I clenched my fist. Which was worse, to taunt him or to ignore him? What had he ever done to deserve this? Wherever he went, he preached nothing but love. And suddenly, I was seized by an amazing thought. It was love that nailed him there. Love was the reason behind it all. He had given himself to die out of love. I gazed up at the master, tears blurring my eyes. It was coming back to me, the words he had spoken as we shared the Passover meal. Love one another as I have loved you, he said. Standing by the cross, I fixed my heart upon the taunting crowd and the dice-rolling soldiers and the disciples still crouching in hiding because of the Master. I would love them because of Him. What about you? What will you do because of Him? Our hymn of invitation is 293. Jesus calls us over the tomb. And I invite you to come. Come and receive Christ as your Savior. Come and recommit your life to Him. Come and unite with His church as we stand and as we sing. You come.